Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. You know, in the world of property law, there's this idea that you can, like, control a piece of land forever.
Yeah, you'd think with all the legalese and documents, it'd be pretty clear cut.
Exactly. But then you stumble across a case like Wills v. Pierce, and it really throws a wrench in the works.
It all starts in Georgia. Pretty simple property transfer on the surface. We've got a deed, and it uses the magic words fee simple.
Fee simple. Sounds pretty absolute, right? Like ultimate ownership.
Right, you'd think so. Fee simple is basically the top tier of ownership. You can sell it, you can pass it down to your heirs, it's yours to do with what you want.
But Wills v. Pierce throws in a curveball. There's this little clause, a condition subsequent, that really muddies the waters.
It's like that but in a contract, you know? Like, here's the property, it's all yours, B-U-T.
And in this case, the but was a doozy.
Mm.
The deed said that the grantee, their family, and even their descendants were required to use the property as a home.
Forever. If they ever decided to abandon it, well, the property would revert right back to the original grantor's estate.
So you're telling me they're saying, here's this house, it's all yours, but you and your entire family line are obligated to live here for all eternity.
Essentially, yeah. It really makes you wonder about what ownership really means.
You've got this concept of fee simple, which implies complete freedom, but then you've got this condition that basically chains the property to a specific family forever.
That's where the conflict comes in. And believe me, it got messy. The grantee seemingly abandoned the property, and the original grantor's heirs decided, hey, let's grab that land back.
And you won't believe this, but the trial court actually sided with them.
Can you imagine? But thankfully, the appellate court stepped in and saw the light. They're like, hold up a minute. Forcing someone to live on a property forever goes against the whole point of fee simple ownership.
Yeah, if you can't sell it, what's the point of owning it, right?
Exactly. And that's where they hit them with this legal term, unenforceable restraint on alienation.
Sounds intense.
It means you can't stop someone from selling or transferring a property if you've already granted them fee simple ownership. It defeats the purpose.
So the appellate court saw this condition and was basically like, nope, you can't just sneak in a clause that makes it impossible to sell the property. That's not playing fair.
And the Georgia Supreme Court, they ultimately agreed. They looked at it and said, this condition, void. It's unenforceable.
That's pretty definitive. They essentially confirmed that fee simple means you have the freedom to do what you want with the property, and that includes selling it.
You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't grant full ownership and then try to micromanage what happens to that land for generations to come.
Sounds like the court was setting a precedent, laying down the law when it comes to fee simple ownership. But before we get too deep into the implications of all this, let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment to dig even further into the reasoning behind the Wills v. Pierce decision and what it all means for you. Stay tuned.
Welcome back, everyone. Now, before the break, we were talking about how the court in Wills v. Pierce really shut down that deed condition, trying to control, like, who could live on the property forever.
It was a pretty strong statement about what real ownership means, don't you think?
Absolutely. To get why they decided that way, we need to look at how they understood fee simple ownership. Like, they really stressed that fee simple means you have the absolute right to sell or transfer your property.
So no strings attached.
Right. Anything that goes against that is, legally speaking, a big no-no.
So trying to attach a condition that says, oh, but you can never sell this, is kind of like giving a gift and then immediately taking it back.
Perfect analogy. It's like the court was saying, look, you can't grant someone full ownership and then turn around and try to control what happens to it generations later.
They were really focused on the practicality of this restriction, weren't they? I mean, who in their right mind would buy a house knowing they and their kids and their grandkids and so on would be obligated to live there forever?
Right. It's just not realistic. And the court zeroed in on that. They saw this condition, while not explicitly banning a sale, made it impossible in practice. They used this phrase, unenforceable restraint on alienation.
Sounds pretty serious.
It is. It means you can't unreasonably limit an owner's ability to transfer their property, especially if you already gave them fee simple ownership.
To illustrate their point, the court actually brought up a previous case, Wadley Lumber Co. v. Lott. Refresh my memory, what went down in that case, and how does it connect to Wills v. Pierce?
Okay, so in Wadley, the deed had this thing called a repurchase option, which basically meant the original grantor could buy back the property under certain circumstances.
So not a complete block on selling, but they had dibs if the grantee ever wanted out.
Exactly. The court saw that repurchase option as a limited restriction, not a total roadblock.
So what made Wills v. Pierce different?
Well, here the condition acted like a complete ban on selling but dressed up as a use requirement, and that's why the court wasn't having it.
It seems like the Georgia Supreme Court drew a line in the sand with these two cases. Restrictions totally blocking the sale of a fee simple estate. Big no-no. Limited restrictions. Maybe okay, depending on the details.
It all comes down to whether the restriction messes with that fundamental right to transfer property freely.
Okay, so I'm getting why this particular condition got the thumbs down. But are there any times a grantor could put limits on who lives on their property? Like, what if they just want to make sure it's used for a specific purpose, say, just for residential housing? That doesn't necessarily stop someone from selling, right?
That's a great question, and one the court actually addressed head-on in Wills v. Pierce. They specifically said they weren't ruling out all deed restrictions.
So some restrictions are okay. Where's that line?
The court distinguished general use restrictions from the personal and perpetual kind we see in Wills v. Pierce. A general use restriction, like saying residential purposes only, doesn't target specific people forever, you see.
So a grantor can say how their property is used, like as a park or for houses, but the second they start naming names and saying only these specific people can live here, that's trouble.
Bingo! General use restrictions have a broader purpose, like preserving a neighborhood's character, right? But the Wills v. Pierce restriction was all about controlling who lived there, generation after generation, and the court was like, nope, too far.
It's like they recognized that letting grantors dictate residency forever would have ripple effects throughout society, impacting housing markets, individual freedoms, chaos.
It gets you thinking about how we balance property rights with the need for a system where property can, you know, actually change hands.
This has been fascinating, really getting into the legal nuts and bolts of Wills v. Pierce. But beyond the technicalities, it makes you think bigger. What's the philosophy of ownership? How do we balance respecting a grantor's wishes with a grantee's right to really own their property?
And that's the question we'll grapple with in the final part of our deep dive. We'll look at the lasting impact of this case and what it means for both legal pros and everyday property owners. Stay with us.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. So we've spent this episode really dissecting Wills v. Pierce and all its twists and turns when it comes to property ownership. But, you know, at the end of the day, what are the big takeaways here? Like, what does this all mean for lawyers who are, you know, writing up these deeds or for people who might find themselves in court fighting over these restrictions?
Well, for anyone drafting deeds, Wills v. Pierce is a huge GE wake-up call. Be super careful with those perpetual personal restrictions. You know, trying to control who lives on a property, like, way down the line is probably going to backfire.
So while saying a property can only be used for, let's say, residential purposes, that might be okay. But the minute you start getting specific, like naming names, saying only these people and their descendants can ever live here, that's when you're into trouble.
You got it. And for anyone who might end up, you know, litigating these kinds of property disputes, well, Wills v. Pierce gives you some serious ammo. If you see a deed condition that's trying to tie a property to a specific family, like forever, you can argue it's an unreasonable restraint on alienation, just like the court found in this case.
It sounds like this case, it's pretty essential knowledge for anyone working in real estate law. And the principles, I mean, they could apply in other places too, right? But even beyond the legal specifics, Wills v. Pierce really forces you to think bigger. Like, what's the philosophy behind owning property? Where's the line between a grantor's wishes and a grantee's right to truly own and control their property?
That's the really cool thing about this case. It shows the tension between what individuals want and the need for a system that allows property to, you know, actually change hands. It reminds us that true ownership means having the freedom to sell, transfer, do what you want with your property without these crazy restrictions.
It's like the court was saying, hey, you can set some basic rules, but you can't control what happens to this property a century from now.
Exactly. And that statement, it reinforces a core principle. Property rights need to be balanced against the needs of society as a whole. If everyone could dictate who lives on their property forever, can you imagine the mess? Housing markets, inheritance laws, even personal freedoms would be turned upside down.
Yeah, it'd be a total nightmare.
Yeah.
It really shows how legal ideas often reflect deeper values. In this case, it's the importance of individual freedom and being able to participate in a, you know, dynamic property market. By getting rid of this super restrictive deed condition, the court said that ownership shouldn't be chained to the whims of someone who's long gone.
Well said. Wills v. Pierce gives us a lot to ponder, that's for sure. How do we balance individual property rights with making sure those rights don't, like, completely stifle our property system? It's a question that goes way beyond just this one case, touching on the very foundation of our societal values.
And that's a question we all need to think about. Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Wills v. Pierce. Hopefully you've all learned a bit about the limits of control when it comes to owning property and why it's so important to balance individual rights with, you know, the good of everyone. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning.